Welcome inside the Yellow Studio. My name is Randy Cantrell. I'm your host here. This is episode 5032. The website is leaningtowardwisdom.com. That's also the name of this podcast. The tagline, which I rarely use, probably should use it more, Modern Tales of an Ancient Pursuit. We're going to pick up where we left off, I think it was on Tuesday last week. Two episodes in 1 week. Do not begin to expect that. Today, let's talk about spending more time in a place where you want to be. We'll do it next. Before we begin, let me give you an update on the project hashtag Craving Encouragement. We are now at 83% of our financial goal of $600. Thanks to you, thanks to everybody who has made a financial contribution, I am now $80 away from the goal. Now, I'm still mostly not wanting your money, but wanting your stories. Stories of a time when somebody encouraged you in a meaningful way. You have seen and heard a theme, especially in recent shows, because encouragement is an expression of belief. And so what I'm doing is collecting stories of those expressions that others have made in you. Some time in your life when somebody expressed belief in you, when maybe nobody else did, but boy, did it make a difference. This is so rare, and I don't really understand why, because it is commonly craved by 100% of us. But we tend to not be great at doing it, at giving it. We tend to not experience receiving it. And maybe it speaks to an even greater tragedy, and that's loneliness. Because people crave an encouragement, and that's you, that's me, that's everybody. We also likely crave connection. And sometimes connection eludes us. Sometimes we don't know how to foster it. We don't know how to attract it. We don't even know how to reciprocate it. The human condition, helped by other humans. There's the irony. Humans helping humans. It's the irony of loneliness and the irony of craving encouragement. If you would like to participate, it requires no money. Just go to the website, leaningtowardwisdom.com. In the navigation, you will find Support This Podcast. Click that, and it will tell you everything you need to know. Pick up where we left off last week, thinking about our imagination instead of our past. If you haven't listened to episode 5031, you don't have to, but you may want to go back and listen to that. I want to begin today by talking about Thanksgiving, and there are really two words that I think about when I think about giving thanks, considering being blessed, and we all are. And the two words that leap to my mind are grace and gratitude. And it really, grace is the big one. A few weeks ago, a social media guru released a statement. And here's the statement. Don't let your friends change your mind. Don't let your friends change your mind. And people very quickly, begin to pile on all the adoration and, oh, that's great. That's wonderful. Oh, yes, yes, absolutely. This big round of approval. And like so many memes and quips, I thought about this, and instantly I thought, well, it really kind of depends on your present state of mind. It kind of depends on if you are the friend trying to change somebody. It kind of depends on their state of mind. I mean, for instance, if you've got a friend who's suicidal, I sure hope you're doing everything you can to change their mind. If you've got a friend who's tempted to cheat on her spouse, I would hope that you would try to help change her mind. If you've got a friend who's intoxicated, not able to really drive, but is fixing to get behind the wheel of his car, I would certainly hope that you would take his keys, if not attempt to change his mind. if you're in a funk, do you not want your friends to try to help you out of said funk? If you're discouraged, don't you want your friends attempting to encourage you? You know, it's just among the many things today that they sound smart, but they're really stupid. And we are surrounded by it. We are surrounded by meme-based wisdom, which is nothing more than drivel, superficial. You know, on one hand, I can hear people say, well, don't overthink it. Don't overthink it. You're overthinking it. And then on the flip side, people can say, you know, listen, stop and think about it. Stop and think about it. Okay, well, which is it? I mean, how can you just think? How can I think just right? I want to think just right. I don't want to overthink it, but I don't want to not think about it. Okay, so you can't. You can never get it right. That's the part of the power of this whole thing about grace. And for now, I'm kind of focused on being thankful. It's always appropriate. It is always right. All of these other pieces of guruism, they aren't. They're quite situational. But being thankful never fails. Being thankful is always appropriate. You just can't say that about too many things. I mean, to even use dramatic terms like always and never is remarkable. Wait a minute, what? Being thankful is always appropriate. It is always right. It never fails. Yes, that's true. How many other things can you say that about? It's ironic to me that the things that we associate with grace, at least the things I associate with grace, and the way that I'm using the word grace today, they fit the bill more than anything else. These are intrinsically good things, and every reasonable human being recognizes their goodness. And yet we can be so reluctant to practice these things, to really make them part of the fabric of our life. Seems that if something was always beneficial to us, and if there was something that would never fail us, wouldn't you think that we'd lean into that really heavily, as much as possible? But instead, sometimes we shy away from it. And maybe worse, there are times that people just absolutely declare that they won't do it. Grace things like being thankful. Here's the one that people repel quite often. Forgiveness, compassion. Those are grace things. Thankfulness, forgiveness, compassion. Find a time, find a place. See if you can do this. This is a way to engage your imagination. Is there a time or place where practicing those things won't help you? Forget about the other people. Is there a time or a place where being thankful, extending forgiveness, having compassion, where that will not help you? Go ahead. Give it your best shot. You can't. You can't because there is no time, there is no place where those things are not beneficial to you. Which is why grace is so foundational to leaning toward wisdom. The benefits are just too vast, too deep to ignore. I know some secrets. I don't know many, but, well, I know at least three secrets about all this. Stop thinking about what you don't have. Instead, think about what you do have, which is really kind of the same thing as stop thinking about your lack. Think about your abundance. Stop thinking that you're a victim and instead see yourself as blessed. But the real secret, the real powerful secret is you have to want it. You got to want it. If you don't want to do it, well, you're not going to do it. And until you want to live with grace, you're never going to be able to live with grace. But the powerful secret is that the moment you decide you want grace, you want to live by grace, you can. It's kind of instant power. This is the beginning of spending more time in the place where you want to be. Now, we are assuming that where you want to be is a good place. That where you want to be is not only good for you, but it's good for those who love you. It's good for the universe. It's good for the world. And that isn't always the case. Because there are some people who want what they want. And they don't care if they hurt themselves. They don't care if they hurt others. Well, I hope that's not you. those people, they are the biggest fools on the planet. Selfishness, a lack of temperance or self-control, lives filled with destructive behaviors, all aimed at sin and self and immorality. Man, these are wasted lives. They don't contribute anything to their own life, to their family, to their friends, to the world. No, instead they wreck whatever's in their path. They are contributing to the collective foolishness that the rest of us are battling really hard to conquer in our own lives and trying to help one another conquer it in your life. Because in one fell swoop, these people, these foolish behaving people, are the enemy undoing all of the good that the rest of us may be attempting to establish. Here's the real pickle. Yet they feel like they are the oppressed. They are the oppressed. We're holding them down. Too stupid to know that they're the oppressors. You know, but they see it how they see it. And until events happen that open their eyes, they're going to continue to be blinded by their own delusions, fueled by their pride, their selfishness, and their ego. We're never going to lack for these people. They surround us. All the more reason for us to embrace the truths that can help us wage this battle, this war against our own human foolishness, because that's what's going to destroy us individually and collectively, our own foolishness. All the more reason to get up early each morning, dedicated to doing just one thing, conquer our own foolishness. And we've got to do it today. In fact, you know what? We just have to do it today. And then we'll get up tomorrow, and as Steely Dan sings, we'll do it again. And along the way, we'll try to help somebody else conquer their foolishness. And you know what? It is not the least we can do. It's the most we can do. And it begins with me. Stopping long enough to not think about what the world owes me, or what I think the world owes me. For me to stop long enough to realize I'm entitled to nothing, and to stop long enough to not to consider what injustices I have endured, but instead of all that, to catalog the blessings that have been placed under my stewardship. Not yours, mine. You got your own. And so it begins with me asking, am I a good, faithful steward? Not over your things, not over your stuff, not over who you are, but of myself. And that requires an honest, thoughtful answer, which will bring us the truth. Well, grace is challenged, and all of its components like gratitude and forgiveness and compassion and others that we could name, it's challenged by comparing ourselves to others. The fact is, other people don't have any impact. They have no influence on our practice of grace, except, of course, because we give them permission to control those things in our life. You know, I might be more grateful, except I see others who have it better than me. I mean, how can I be gracious when I see Instagram posts of people who are having fun, they're traveling to beautiful places, they're enjoying life, and that life that they seem to be living, that's foreign to mine. My life sucks by comparison, so my lack of gratitude, don't you see, it's not my fault, it's their fault. Never mind that intellectually, I know there are millions of people who suffer present conditions that are far worse than mine. I just don't think about them. I don't think of the people whose feet will never walk on hardwood, tiled, or carpeted floors. I never think about people who will live their entire lives not knowing what it is to walk mere feet inside their house, to turn on a faucet to have clean water. I don't think about people who will live their entire lives not knowing what it is to live in a country ruled by peace. Forget about those people, because I do. No, instead, I'm taking aim at those living better than me. They're who I'm looking at. My telescope is fixated on them. Look at them in their bigger, nicer houses, their newer, nicer cars, taking these fancy trips, eating at restaurants I can't afford, buying things I'm never going to be able to buy, doing all these cool things I'm never going to be able to do. Those people, those people, they are the reason for my lack of grace. It's not my fault. Is this really where you want to spend your time? Is this really the place where you want to go? Is this really the place where you want to be? Is this beneficial? Why don't we consciously figure out how to spend more time in better places? I got suspicions. I don't know. I think it's largely because we don't know how. Mostly, I suspect it's because accepting blame and responsibility and accountability for our lives is just too painful. But that's only because we focus on the pain and not the power. Let's flip it. Focus on the power, not the pain. You know, this seems huge to me, and I'm fascinated why we do not see this more clearly. And I'm really fascinated at the countless times that I don't see it myself more clearly because, well, I'm just like you. I am prone to my own foolishness. When we look deeply enough inside ourselves and we face our pain, the pain that we feel we need to protect ourselves from, that is best done, or so we foolishly think, in seeing other people as the source of that pain. So what do we need to do? Well, it's pretty clear. We have to protect ourselves from these people. I mean, after all, they did it to us. The irony is that in protecting ourselves from pain in this way, we give them increasingly more power. And all along the way, our power is diminished until it's gone completely. And eventually, we're left as roadkill on the highway of life. We're powerless to do anything about anything because, well, the universe is just so much bigger than us and the universe has conspired against us. There's no way we're ever going to win. When the reality is, we've got it all wrong. They aren't responsible for our pain. The world isn't responsible for our pain. It's mostly our fault. And if it is our fault, well, back up. If it's not our fault, which is the argument, well, no, it's not my fault. Well, okay, let's assume that's true. Well, let's assume that it's not all our fault. It's 100% our responsibility. And there's no need to protect ourselves from things beyond our control because, well, we got plenty of work to do to protect ourselves from our own foolishness, which, by the way, is best done by embracing goodness and committing ourselves to our own learning, understanding, and growth. It's these grace things again. In short, to become the best human we can, to be better. There, that's the path forward. Oh, man, that's a lot of work. It's a lot of work. It's, you know, it's way more work than blaming other people. Who cares? Never mind that it's productive. Never mind that it's profitable for us. Well, and everybody around us. It's just, it's easier to blame people. Maybe that's why we don't do it. It's hard work. Well, we think it's hard work, and maybe it is. Or maybe we just don't know how because the collective culture is always working against us. You do know that collective wisdom, it ain't so wise. Never has been. Mob rule is a thing. And it's never smart. It's never wise. It's never thoughtful. It's never considerate. You see it depicted in movies. You see it depicted in TV shows. Mob rule. It's never any of those things. And it never fails to be colossally stupid, foolish, and destructive, mostly impulsive. Well, we have a different mob rule today, thanks to the internet and social media. So some days ago, Nike comes out with this sneaker that has the Betsy Ross American flag on the heel. You know, it's for July 4th and whatnot. And Mr. Colin Kaepernick, he jumps on it as being racist, and there she blows. And social media ninnies from around the globe, they all jump on it. And I'm thinking, poor Betsy Ross. Well, poor Colin Kaepernick. Poor America. Poor all of us. All of us for being surrounded by such nonsense. Such colossal idiocy. But we always have been. We always will be. And you know why? The ninnies have the numbers. They've got the numbers, people. And they're always going to have the numbers. Which is an opportunity for us. For you, for me. It's an enormous opportunity. I don't care if Colin Kaepernick continues to think that there's tyranny that's disrupting his life and causing all of these problems. He's part of the problem. and to escape the herd of ninnies driven by impulses that quite often aren't their own, driven to remain victims of Nike and every other company on the planet, driven to remain victims of a society that just will not give them everything they want and bend to their every will, and they feel entitled to, oh, well, there's just so much tyranny from which to escape. And plenty of time to do it, because we can do it in an instant. We can escape this tyranny. We can do it in a flash, one blinding moment of clarity where we just stop being victimized. And at the same time, we accept responsibility for our own lives. Oh, would that Colin Kaepernick and countless others would do that. I don't care what Colin Kaepernick thinks. I don't care what Twitter says. And I don't care what new shoes or watch you just bought. It does not affect me unless I let it. And honestly, I don't see any value in letting it. I'm thankful. I'm thankful we just celebrated July 4th here in America. Kind of the country's birthday, if you please. I'm thankful to live in a country where Kaepernick can say whatever he wants. I hate that people like him can rally herds of ninnies and contribute to the collective lunacy. I hate that. But when you express gratitude to live in America, that's partly what you embrace. People's ability and people's choice to be the ninnies that they would be. So, Colin, I salute you. I salute you and your whole ninny army and all like you who choose to let others dictate their path and their life's outcome. I just don't choose to follow. It's not where I want to spend my time. It's not the place where I want my present or my future to reside. And so I'm choosing something different, something else, something over which I have control. I'm thankful. I'm thankful to be an American. I've never had to protect my family. I've never had to protect myself from foreign invaders or from fellow countrymen. And I've only heard the bombs and the machinations of war on TV and in films. I've never had to walk miles to fetch clean water for my family. I've never had to devote myself to hours a day wondering how am I going to feed my family or how to find suitable sleeping quarters for the night. I don't know a life like that. I'm sad. I'm sad for those whose lives are defined by those activities. Yes, I'm enormously thankful that mine is not. And it's not in some I'm better than you kind of a gratitude, but it's just an amazement, wondering quite often why I'm so blessed while others aren't. And you know, some things you just accept. And you leverage for the best for yourself and those around you, for your spot in the world at this moment in time. I just accept such things about my life and give God the thanks. Because I know I didn't do anything to deserve it. But I am responsible for what I do with it. I'm a steward, and so are you. And I just haven't found why me to be a worthwhile question. On the positive side or the negative side, on the blessing side or the curse side, largely because there's no answer. And if there is, how could it possibly help make a, it could not help us. I can't figure out a way that it could help us make a positive mark on the world. Why me? Why was I born in America? Why weren't I could have been born in the Sudan. Why not? Well, we can wrestle with those kinds of things from now on and accomplish nothing. Truth is, I was born where I was born. I've been blessed with what I've been blessed with. And the big question is, now what? Now what? Our lives are resources. And I'm not talking about our stuff. I'm not talking about our circumstances. I was born in America. I was born in a small town in Oklahoma. I largely grew up in Louisiana. I've lived all of my life in Louisiana, Texas, and Oklahoma. But resources are comprised of our experiences, our thoughts, our actions, our choices, our words, our willingness to help others, our behaviors. Which of those do you want to declare, well, that doesn't belong to me. I didn't have any part in that. Quite often people might pick experiences. Well, experiences, I haven't really. You've had no influence on what you experience. I mean, you better think more deeply, because your experiences are resources that are within your power to deploy however you see fit. And they have largely been what they've been because of choices that you made. Now I can go back to my childhood days and declare, well, I didn't, you know, what choice? I didn't have any choice to be born where I'm. No, you didn't. But every day, even as a kid, I had choices of the experiences that I was going to be part of and create. I talked about it in the last episode. There's the power. You can look at it intently and you can stare it down like you might a buddy in a no blink contest, or you can surrender all of your power and you can just opt to hug it out with pain. Pain, I'm going to embrace you. No, it's not the way to go. Now, I'm not saying that we can avoid all pain. We can't avoid all suffering or all heartache. In fact, I would argue we shouldn't. I'm saying that we can likely eliminate much of it, and most of that's going to be the self-induced kind. We can reduce a lot of it, again, the self-induced kind, but we absolutely, positively can better manage it by owning our lives, all of it. This whole, the magic of the ideal, you don't ever get there. The land of your ideal, that's always up the road a ways, somewhere, maybe near, maybe far. That's really not the point. The point is the daily striving to get there. It's the daily striving that promotes lives that are better today than yesterday, if only marginally, if only incrementally. Still better. Small erosion over time reveals itself. You go to the mountains, you go to the streams, pretty apparent. Small investments over time reveal the power of compounding interest. Small movements, small actions taken toward a goal over time reveal the power of mastering that goal. Could be music, it could be art, could be communication, it could be anything. Inch by inch, it's all a cinch. And if it's not a cinch, then at least there's a higher probability of it if we continue to grow incrementally. Guarantees nothing other than perhaps that we can make today better than it was yesterday. And that's an absolute fact. That is a guarantee if we put our minds to it, if we set out to do it, if we take the action to do it, we can absolutely make today better than yesterday. How much better? Don't know. How are you even going to measure that? And you know what? We can get up tomorrow and we can make tomorrow better still. That's a pretty powerful guarantee. Time spent where we want to be versus time spent where we are or where we've already been. That's why we began the conversation last week the way we did. So much focus on the past. Worthless. Worthless. Because we're powerless to do anything from it other than learn from it. Just this past week, there's a 27-year-old professional baseball pitcher. Played for the California Angels, maybe. I'm not a baseball guy. Apologies. But it was just a suburb here of Dallas-Fort Worth, just north of us, called South Lake, Texas. And they discovered him in the afternoon. They were going to play the Rangers that evening. Found him dead in his hotel room. 27 years old. Sad. Police don't suspect any foul play, but I'm sure an autopsy is being done to reveal what happened. Well, that's beneficial. That's going to be beneficial for his family. It could have all kinds of ramifications to at least know what happened. And when we look at our lives and we look at our past, not to live there, but to deconstruct it, to be polite, autopsy it, if you will. We need to leverage it for that, but that's not often what we do. Often we choose to embrace it. And mostly what we want to embrace about it, about the past, is regret and blame. And neither of those serves us. They don't serve us with those components of grace, that's for sure. You know what they do? They build up resentment and bitterness. I've looked. I haven't been able to find anybody. Maybe you know somebody. Shoot, you may know a whole group of somebodies who were able to crank out a really good life because what they did, here was their strategy. They decided to incorporate more bitterness and resentment into their lives. And boy, did it make a positive difference. It changed everything. It made them colossally successful, colossally wiser. Maybe you know somebody like that. No, you don't. But I have seen people, I've seen lots of people, enough to prove to me that it's empirical evidence that resentment and bitterness don't pay. But all those components of grace, boy, do they pay off big time. To what are you attached? It's one way that we can look more deeply inside ourselves and see ourselves more accurately. It's part of that soul searching that we all need to do, to look more closely inside ourselves to find the answer to the question, well, most notably the question, why? Because there are a lot of people who wake up every morning, go to bed every night saying, why? Some people say, well, why am I doing this? Others may say, well, why is this happening to me? Or why does this always happen to me? And most probably have no true answers, but they've got a lot of excuses. Until they're made to stare at their attachments, which could be anything. Pick it. It doesn't matter. To what are you attached? Is there an addiction? Is there an abuse? How about ego? How about narcissism, selfishness? How about status? How about stuff? Your attachments help define your identity. I know lots of business people, for instance, and they are very attached to their status symbols. They are very attached to their titles. They are very attached to their cars, their suits, their houses, their office, their trips, their vacations, their dinner reservations, their stuff. Very attached. It defines them. And their prestige is locked inside these things. It's just deeply locked inside these things. Now, extract one or more of these things. And it does happen sometimes due to just cycles of life that affect all of us. Remove some of them. You will see these people struggle because they no longer know who they are. I mean, they thought they were one thing and now they don't know because these attachments have been jumbled up. What's important to you? What is so important to you that it helps define you because you choose that? You choose it every single day. We're attached to something. We're attached to someone. And we get to decide. We get to decide what's important. And I'm rather supposing that all of us have a default setting. And for most of us, I think we probably live by that default setting. All of your software, if you go to the preferences, there's default settings for most all software. And that default is intended by the software creators to be mostly what would fit the average bear, but it may not be ideal for you. I think the precious few among us, the supreme achievers among us, look at those default settings and say, nah, I want to be more intentional. I want to be more determined. And then there are some of us, I got my hand in the air, we're working toward that. We're trying to escape the gravitational pull of the defaults of mediocrity and foolishness. And by the way, those are the defaults. Make no mistake about it. Making choices about our attachments is a daily grind. And these attachments can be disrupted in an instant, momentarily. And they can be impacted short-term, long-term. And we've got these new norms kind of happening all the time. Now, many of these are systemic. For instance, I can think about a guy who longs for a 7 Series BMW, and he finally gets one. Well, he's been attached. He's been attached to having a 7 Series BMW long before he ever got one. It was his attachment because it was important, super important. And when he gets it, it's not enough. It's never going to be enough. Because if he has a 2019 model, pretty soon the 2020 model is going to come out. And so now his isn't new. It's not current. It's not cool. And then the next year, another new model comes out. And so his attachment is going to continue to spiral down more and more and more. His soul's never going to be satisfied because, well, the attachments at their core are pretty insignificant. They're pretty insubstantial. Quite frankly, they're shallow. Yeah, take a look around. Look at your life, however fancy, however unfancy it may be. Take a look at other people. I mean, we've got some really shallow attachments, and it can affect any of us, all of us. And of course, there is, you know, those taboo topics that we don't like to talk about. Fear gets a whole lot of talk. Shame and embarrassment don't get much press these days, but they're part of that whole fear component set. Shame and embarrassment. You know, I'm ashamed. I'm ashamed I'm driving a 10-year-old car and nobody else is. A whole plenty of other people are. You just don't see them. Not measuring up to others. And again, because we're busy comparing ourselves to others. And it either makes us feel better about ourselves or it makes us feel worse about ourselves. And we use it for both. We leverage it for both. We judge other people because, well, it makes us feel better. I'm more righteous than they are, so easy for me to condemn them. Now I feel better. I can feel worse about myself because I don't have that 7 Series BMW. Hint, I don't want a 7 Series BMW. But that's another topic. And you know the problem with all this. It's not our fault. Again, this is not our fault. It's not because of us. It's because of them. Them. The power of them. It's the proverbial they. Well, they know everything. And they often determine everything. Mostly, they distract us. They distract us from ourselves. They prevent us from searching deeply enough to stare down our fears, our doubts, our insecurities, our shame, our embarrassment. Time with ourselves is power. Yeah, it's also pain. But we can focus on the power knowing that the pain is real. And by our facing the pain appropriately, our power grows. Spending more time in the place where you want to be requires our willingness to spend more time in the place where we need to be, no matter how uncomfortable, no matter how painful. Yeah, for the picture, for if you go to the website leaningtowardwisdom.com and find episode 5032, you'll see a photograph of an idyllic place for a guy like me. May not be idyllic for you, but that's what that picture represents for me. I came very close to putting a picture that depicted some place that I would absolutely not want to be, some place that would be a painful place for me to be. But that really isn't the point. I think the point is that we need to endure a certain degree of pain and being uncomfortable in order to be at a place where we want to be, because that's where the power is, at least the power that we possess to change our own lives. And we largely do have power to do that. But fear drives too many of us. And largely it's the fear of what other people are going to say, how they're going to judge us, what they're going to think about us. Because we really care what people think of us. And here's the scary thing. We mostly don't care about these people. In fact, largely, we don't even know who these people are. It's social media. It's John Doe out there, and we don't know John. But we don't want John thinking poorly of us. And it's scary because we mostly can't control what people think about us anyway. Because negative people, which is by and large the defining trait of most people, which is why I push so hard toward optimism, because man alive, if you want to be special and spectacular, be optimistic. And I don't mean give it lip service. I mean, be truly optimistic, truly believe, which is really, really difficult. Most people don't. They're negative. Well, guess what they're going to do? No matter what you do, they're still going to judge. If you think you're going to get it right and satisfy them, you're nuts. It's not going to happen. And not only are they going to be critical, but most of them are going to be harshly so much of the time. Here's the truth. They don't matter because this is your life. It's not their life. Conquering your foolishness, conquering your life. There's the game, not conquering theirs and not letting them conquer yours. They've got their own to deal with. Let them deal with theirs. More time in the place where you want to be means you're not there yet. Maybe you're not there long enough yet. Mostly for me, it means it really kind of hasn't become the reality yet. And if I were to kind of give you some it's not really a formula, but if I were to kind of lay this out in a more linear fashion, it would be find the place where you want to be. Now in your head, go spend some time there long enough to make it come true, and then develop a new vision, a new place where you want to go, and then repeat the process. It really is as simple as that. Now, it's not easy. Great leaders see the future first. That's a truth. Are you a great leader of your life? Well, the proof is found first in what and how you think, and then in what are you going to do about it, and what do you do about it? And quite frankly, a lot of people, they think about it. They just don't do anything about it. Because we love the comfort of excuses. Our minds crave this, seek it, search for it. I know I do. I don't want to grind. I know other people wear it as a badge of courage and honor, and that's great. I don't. I don't want to sweat. I'd rather lounge. I'd rather do nothing. Here's the problem. Doing nothing produces exactly that. Nothing. Fancy and soft don't work. In spite of the fact that most of us, I believe, I know I do, we have high cravings for both. I do. I want fancy and soft. You kidding? Give me fancy and soft all day long. In the past, it's soft in one sense. We can't do anything about it except go dwell on it. And so that's what we do. It's not soft in that we often use it as an excuse and leverage it because, we're a victim of our past. Imagination, that's hard. So is discipline. Simplicity is hard. Now, I like that. I lean toward that, but that's just, again, that's just kind of a natural DNA thing. Complexity, that's not really hard. Ambiguity, that is super easy. Conquering yourself is the chore, which is why these conversations are critical, because they don't require anybody else. This is you, this is me, this is us, this is our life. The proverbial they don't matter, except for the fact that we need to shut them out. We need to shut them up, at least in our head. Yeah, we can't shut them up, unfortunately. Because we've got to be busy working to figure these things out for ourselves. And you can't do that with this chorus surrounding you. Where are you right now? I don't mean physically. Right now, in this moment, this present state. And your present doesn't have to be awful. Fact is, it could be quite wonderful. And I hope it is. It really doesn't matter. Whatever it is, it is. Whatever your reality is right now, that's what matters. Face it. Face it for what it truly is. I don't know what it is. I mean, does it really matter how you got here? Okay, maybe. It doesn't likely matter as much as you think, because it fosters excuse-making and blaming. Now, if it provokes you to examine the truth of how you got here, that can be highly valuable, kind of like that autopsy designed to reveal what happened here. We can learn from all that. We can better understand ourselves and hopefully avoid replicating past mistakes. That's growth. That's use it for that. That's history. Now, we don't often do that, though. Instead, we look at it and, that explains it. That's why I'm here, because somebody did that. I got victimized. See? Me? Oh, man alive, where to begin? I screwed up. I got it wrong. I didn't apply myself. I was lazy. Some things came easily until they stopped coming easily. College kicked my butt because, I didn't do the work. I went into an area of science, which I was so not bent for. I hated it, every lousy bit of it. Until I entered the College of Journalism. And all of a sudden, my identity felt congruent with what I cared about and what I was good at. And everything changed, at least college-wise. I excelled. I mean, I went from not even going to class to straight A's because I loved it. I was an introvert, expected to behave like an extrovert. And sometimes I can be mistaken for an extrovert, but it's not how I roll. So I played the role until it exhausted me. The depths of the struggle are very real. Fast forward to about a decade ago, my career, it's not over. It's far from over. but it has drastically changed. About a 3 to 4 year failed attempt to purchase the company I was running, it left me fractured. I don't know, maybe broken. It was time. It was time to make a change. It was time to reinvent myself, but I didn't have any idea how. All I knew, dive inward, figure this out. Figure this out. I'm a problem solver. But confidence waned. Questions ensued. Now, the search inside, that was intuitive because I've lived with myself long enough to know this is how I roll. I understand as well it's not intuitive for everybody to go inside. I don't consider myself a victim. I never have. I have gone the other way, and sometimes to an extreme that, quite frankly, I don't know is fully profitable, to completely own everything. And I mean everything is my fault. The chore has been longer, more arduous, fraught with way more failure than I ever imagined. And I didn't think it'd last this long, to tell you the truth. Because I didn't think there was more failure, more sorrow, more heartache was going to pile up. Because now I know, these some years later, that at the time I was thinking, okay, I'm knocked down. But I honestly felt like, well, this is as down as I'm ever going to get. Well, boy, was I wrong. That's the thing about the bottom. There is no welcome sign to tell you you've arrived. And all the attachments that proved vain, and we all have them, those had to be faced. Mostly identities. You know, when your identity is tied to a professional role and that professional role goes away for whatever reason, you're kind of left, especially later in life, you're left wondering, well, okay, well, now what am I? Who am I? Especially when you've been doing a particular kind of thing like I had for years and years and years and years and years. Life is flipped upside down. And it was flipped upside down at an age where most people were probably thinking about winding it down. I was trying to find a way to wind it up. Now, the good news is I wanted to wind it up. That's the whole reason I had spent the time trying to buy the company. I didn't want to wind it down. Admittedly, I was hoping to wind it up to a new height. I wasn't thinking about starting over, but starting over is what was demanded. I didn't have any options. If I wanted to move forward, and I did want to move forward, but I had to overcome wanting to retreat and surrender. I think we all have to overcome that. And I'm not going to lie to you. For the first few years, that's all I just wanted to retreat. I was looking for a rock. You ever felt like that? Boy, there have been many, many times in my life where I've just been looking for a rock big enough that I can crawl under it. And this whole thing takes way longer than you think. Way longer than you hope. Way longer than you feel like you need. Here's the truth. No, you need the time that you need, whatever that may be. The time to figure it out. And when you're older, like I was, well, and obviously still am, it's very hard. Has been for me. Because I think self-discovery when you're older is, well, it's like history to the older. I mean, there's just, you're like on this archaeological dig, and there's just so many more years of debris that you have to remove to find the truth. And thankfully, I had a lifetime of inner strength, which is part of my DNA, to go inside, to be reflective. Self-introspection came very easily, came very naturally. And along the way, I made some discoveries. And one of the discoveries I made is that forgiveness is consistently, has been through the years, one of my top two character strengths. It's always been easy for me to forgive. It has always been easy for me to ask for forgiveness. It has been equally difficult, almost impossible, to forgive myself. And I had no idea how powerful that opponent would be. But boy, did it kick me. It put me in a chokehold. It refused to let me tap out. And I realized, okay, it won't let me surrender. I'm going to have to fight. I'm just going to have to fight because my lack of self-forgiveness will kill me. I haven't won it. I kind of feel like I may have turned the tide. I've countermoved. I'm not sure I've got, in wrestling terms, I'm not sure I've got my self-forgiveness, you know, fully mounted yet, where I've got a dominant position over it, but I'm working on it. It's taken a long, long time, largely because, well, life threw a bunch of other haymakers at me. I was not planning on these things. I figured this is bottom. This is as bad as it gets, and this is plenty bad enough. But no, that's when life tells you, oh, you silly boy. It happens. It's happened to you. It's happened to me. I knew who I was. That was kind of a mainstay. I knew what I was. The struggle was figuring out, who do I want to be? What do I want to do? And thankfully for me, visualization and imagination come easily. They always have. And getting them focused so they can best serve me. Okay, that's not always been easy. Putting that visualization and imagination into meaningful action. No, that has not always been easy. It's not easy now. But let's look at this word, this verb, imagine. It's one that I've relied on. I can't speak highly enough about it. You should lean into it and at least give it a go. First, figure out where you want to be. You've thought about it. Your gut's telling you something even right now. You've not likely been courageous enough to head in that direction, not fully, not to really commit to it, which is why it's never really become a destination. Never mind that you're not sure how you're going to get there. I'm not either. Never mind that family and friends, they don't think it's possible for you. Yeah, well, me neither. Never mind that you're alone and believing in yourself. Yeah, well, me neither. But does it really matter? Nope. It doesn't. And if it does, it's only because you let it. Your family and friends, they aren't the cavalry coming to save you. And frequently, they are unintentionally the bigger enemy telling you that you won't be able to get where you want to go. And that, frankly, you shouldn't even want to go there. Now it's okay. Listen, these people mean well. They care about you. You know what they're doing. You know exactly what they're doing. They're trying to protect you. They're protecting you from failure. They don't want to see you fail. They think that they're doing you a solid. They're not. Instead, what they're doing is they're approaching it from their own fears and their own insecurities. And now they're unintentionally, they're piling on their fears and insecurities and their shame and their embarrassment onto yours. Well, you've already got yours. What do you need theirs for? That's not what they mean. They're meaning to protect you. They're not. They're just doing what they know to do. They're applying themselves to your life. But they're not you. Have empathy. Better yet, have compassion. Because compassion actually does something. You can be a better human. You can be a bigger human. And there is this ideal to which you can grow closer. And that's what you're trying to do. It's up to you. And get really, really clear. Get really clear on where you want to be. I think this is really critical. Be detailed. Be precise. Be specific. If you look at that photograph that I chose, that image that I chose as kind of the feature image for the post for today's show, again, leaningtowardwisdom.com, episode 5032. Just peer into that picture. These woods, this road, what's at the end of the road? Be that visual, be that specific, be that precise, be that detailed. Write it out. Record it. Do whatever it takes to make this visual more complete. The imagery matters. It really matters because that's what gives you the feeling. You need it. And you need to see it. You need to touch it, feel it, smell it, taste it, experience it in your imagination first. And now go there. This is the great thing about the human brain, isn't it? I mean, it's just terrific. In a flash, you know, people talk about time travel and other, you know, kind of metaphysical kind of stuff. Well, we can in our head. And like any other trip, just set out, start. I don't know that it's that important how long it takes you to get there, maybe sort of, because this is your imagination. You can get there as quickly as you want to. What matters is that you get there and then stay there. Do not make this a quick trip. Do not make this a day stay. This is an extended stay. Because the longer you stay there in your imagination, the faster you will arrive in reality. And it's not a bad plan to get there as quickly as you can and then stay there with no intention, zero intention of leaving unless you discover some better place that you'd like to go. And that'll happen naturally. You will. Over time, there will be some new improved destination. But here's the thing. The habits and the things that you figured out to get to where you want to be will serve you to become more efficient and more effective at getting to new destinations as they come up. It'll happen more easily. It'll happen more quickly. I know what I'm talking about because it's happened to me time and time again. Now, this last journey has been difficult. And you know why? It's completely my fault. Completely my fault. I went sideways for 2 or 3 years and got myself sidetracked and probably held a pity party and lamented, why is this happening to me and why now? I'm not 20 years old anymore. That's all completely on me. This has worked for me my whole life. I'm not talking about something that I haven't practiced and something that I haven't succeeded at. I have. And as I have dissected and kind of done the postmortem on, okay, why is this, what's going on here? I'm sharing with you the insights of the conclusions of these autopsies with my own life. The things that I did, I stopped doing. These are the things that I did. Many of them quite unconsciously, I might add. It's just kind of how I roll. And so for me, I had to purposefully step back and pick them apart and say, okay, what exactly is happening here? And then as I encountered more and more family and friends who were also having difficulties, quite different than mine, but still difficulties, I began to dive more deeply into, okay, it's us. It's our brain. It's in our head. It literally is in our head. But if we will devote ourselves to these habits, they can happen more quickly, more easily, because I'm fully convinced, I know it has been true in my life, along the way, we can become better, even good, and particularly we can become good with being uncomfortable. The suffering will spur us on to go further than we thought we could. The pain that once crippled us, it will seem inconsequential. It was painful at the time, but in the future, it won't seem that bad. And in its place, there will be a new pain that will emerge. A pain that will remind us of how powerful we are to discover new strengths, new abilities, and new resolve. A pain that, I should have done this sooner. And if you're super blessed, a few folks will serve to encourage you along the way. Now, I'll forewarn you right now, most won't. Oftentimes, those closest to you will believe in you the least. And it's okay. Don't judge them for it. Don't ignore them, but ignore them for that. They are not driving your life. You are. So drive it to where you most want and need to go. And stop waiting. I'm glad you clicked play. I hope you are a subscriber. If you're not, please do. Let me hawk the Craving Encouragement Project one last time. Go to leaningtowardwisdom.com and just go to support the podcast in the navigation. And no, this is not financial. Could be, but it doesn't have to be. I mostly want your stories of a time where somebody did express belief in you. What I just said, I believe. It's rare. It's just rare. It's rare for people to express belief in us. Maybe it's rare for people to believe in us. Here's the thing. It doesn't matter. It doesn't have to matter. But boy, when it does happen, it's so stinking great. It's so stinking terrific. It is so powerful because it validates our confidence. And increasingly, I'm coming to realize that of all the things, of all the traits on the planet, and we can talk about persistence and tenacity and talent and skill and opportunity and timing and all the rest of it. But confidence, man, confidence is a big, big key, which is why encouragement is such a big deal. So go to the website, leaningtowardwisdom.com, click on support the podcast, and that'll tell you more about this project and how you can participate at no cost other than a little bit of time if you choose to. That's it for me. I appreciate it. Do not get used to two episodes in 1 week, but I'm aiming for Friday releases, but we'll see how that goes. My name is Randy Cantrell. City of origin is Dallas-Fort Worth, Texas. Greetings and welcome. Inside the Yellow Studio.